What's up, guys? Welcome to the Angler's Happy Hour podcast. Today, we're going to talk about my mediocrity at the U.S. Open, Nick almost dying on an airplane, and Rob having to move more than 27 years worth of fishing tackle into a new house. Stick around.
I want to hear about mead.
It was a decent tournament for me, man. It was one of those tournaments that I ended up being extremely frustrated at the end just because I missed the money by less than a half of a pound. And I weighed in 4 fish one day. Anytime you leave fish on the table, it'll piss you off.
Did you hook them?
Probably. Yeah, you know, I did for sure. And you're going to lose some no matter what. But it's just one of those rules in tournament fishing. If you ever weigh less than a limit, it's going to bite you.
Yeah.
Every time. Yeah, and it did.
It's minimum a pound, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And that's all it's all it took, right?
Right.
I mean, no matter what you're, you know, fishing for, and obviously you're fishing for first, but in that case, the way the tournament had transpired, I was at that
fishing
point that last day just trying to get some money.
Yeah.
And it bit me. And you know, same thing. I'm sure there was a guy in the top 5 that weighed in less than a limit one day and really wishes he didn't. You know?
Yeah, because I mean, that so could have put him over the...
Yeah, totally, 100%.
So that tournament, you had 250 boats in it, huh? The field was maxed out. Did you feel 250 boats on that lake?
It was a huge turnout, man. Yeah, I mean, it's a big lake, right? It's one of the biggest lakes in the country. I think when it's full, it's 160,000 acres. Obviously, it's low right now, but it's still massive, and that was a lot of boats. And
could you see them and feel them? I mean, was it just
I mean, it was more crowded than any other tournament I had fished out there before, and it was certain areas, and like the area, the super upper basin of the lake, Greg's Basin, where the Colorado River comes in, it's an area that used to not get fished much, you know,
when, it's a long run,
yeah, when not everyone had brand new 250s and stuff
that
and,
could go 70 miles an hour until the cows come home.
Exactly, dude. Now, dude, I bet there were 125 boats up there.
Greg was probably smiling, right? Who is Greg? Does anyone know who Greg?
No, don't know Greg.
But he must have been a hell
of a
guy.
There were seriously 125 boats in Greg.
And it's Greg with 2 G's. Greg
he had to differentiate himself because he didn't get his last name right. So he's like, it's 2 G's, bro.
Well, his last name's Basin. So.
He was probably a Mormon settler knowing how those things work out.
There were a ton of boats up there. And the thing about it, dude, is like every U.S. Open, you try to decide, okay, is this going to be one of the higher weight years or lower weight years? Because it's going to really choose where you, it's going to help you choose where to fish.
Sure.
And it was one of those where by the time I was at least halfway through my practice, I'm like, it's going to be a tougher year. I need to get up to Greg's because that's not an area you're going to go catch 12 pounds a day, but you can very well catch 9 or 10 a day. But I go up there, dude, and every pocket's got a boat. Every good stretch, you know, just straight banks got 4 boats on. I'm like, there ain't no way. And sure enough, there were a ton of checks cut up there. Probably over half the checks came out of Greg's. But I don't know, man. There's no chance to win in a scenario like that if you're doing the same thing as everyone else. So I fished away from the boats.
Is there any dirty water up there? I mean, by that point, it's gone through a couple of dams. Is it just... I mean, is there dirty water up there?
In certain places, for sure. And that's usually where it goes down. That's, you know, the more fertile water. And
right.
It's one of those crazy lakes. You guys have both spent a good amount of time on it. You both won some money there. And it's one of those lakes that it's so many people hate it.
Yeah.
But there's something about it that makes me love it. And I don't know, like if I look back at my track record there compared to other lakes, it has not been good to me. I think I've probably fished 12 tournaments there and had maybe 2 really good ones where I left with good money and felt good about it. But I must just be in denial or something because I still freaking love that place.
I think it's just a great tournament lake because it's so big and you can, I mean, you really have to figure it out. It's not like you're running and you're not going to sit on one point and win the tournament.
And this might be
have to figure out a pattern.
Yeah. And this might be a stupid comment because that's what I'm known for. But even though it's massive, it kind of has only a few areas that are going to fish, right? I mean, so it's this giant lake, but ultimately it doesn't fish small per se. But it's a handful of areas that you're going to go and fish in a tournament on mead, right?
You're right.
Yes and no. But it could be one in the clear water. It could be one in the dirty water. It can be one in a lot of different.
Okay.
That's what I think it actually fishes pretty big.
It does. Okay.
And because you can't literally catch them on one point, you're not racing guys to one spot. Do you agree with that, Josh?
Yeah. Most of the time, for sure, man. Yeah. For sure.
I mean, occasionally there'll be a stretch in the back of a creek where a guy will win it. But
find something.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. But
That's, guys in the top 10 will end up doing all kinds of different stuff.
They will.
And certain years, there's really high chance it might be one doing a certain thing, but you can have a really good tournament. There's always a couple guys in the top 10 and you hear about what they did and you're like, dang, that's interesting. I never would have thought of that, you know?
But or the guy that wins, it sounds easy when it's all said and done, right? But
yeah,
that place is not easy by any means.
I like it too, because it's like that lake has the potential to just be gnarly, right? I mean, when the wind blows on that, it's like Pacific Ocean size waves.
So you find fish in an area and now you have to worry about, am I going to get there?
It's like a
you look at the forecast and there's wind predicted and, you know, you might not get to fish that you possibly could win on.
Yeah.
So
that's frustrating.
Yeah, it is, but that's part of the strategy of Lake Mead and part of the part I love about it, you know?
What, I mean, in years past, it hasn't had a full field, right? Is it a relatively new phenomenon? What brought 250 boats to the U.S. Open? Do they have a better prize this year?
Good economy.
Okay. People killing it.
Good economy. Yeah. That's definitely, I mean, that's probably the biggest thing. Guys can afford to fish it.
Yeah. Tournaments fluctuate on the economy big time.
Because we're talking about contractors and stuff like that, right?
That's what they are. Yep.
Yeah. Yeah.
Really good point. You know, the tournament director, Billy, he's doing a really good job.
He is doing a good job.
Dude, okay. If you've fished a bass tournament in the last 10 years and you live in the Western U.S., he's called you. And pressured you into fishing the U.S. Open. And it works, dude.
It definitely works. You got to give him props, man.
A lot of credit for that, for sure. That's got to be a lot of it. And I don't know. So yeah, it's steadily grown, and this thing sold out this year, man. It, you know, 250 boats is a great field, but you don't want it to go really much more than that, just because of what we were talking about. So he capped it at 250. That thing was sold out after 2 weeks. He took deposits, and I mean.
It's awesome.
That doesn't happen anymore, man, out west.
Yeah.
But if you go back east, there are a lot of tournament circuits, especially the team circuits.
I was just gonna say, isn't it like the Texas team tournament circuit, like 250 boats?
Oh, dude.
Like consistently?
They've had tournaments, I'm not kidding, pushing 400 boats. And what happens, they have an option, dude. It's so ridiculous that they've got an option where guys, if they choose not to weigh in, they actually go into a prize pool to be drawn for like $5,000 or something.
Just because it's going to take 3 days to weigh
in
everybody.
They don't
and
want,
all the fish
it might not
die.
Be $5,000. It might be $1,000, but it's an option.
So there's a benefit to not weighing in.
If you got 9 pounds, you're not going to get anything and you don't care about the points. Yeah. So they give guys incentive just so they can get out of there.
That's actually a really brilliant
midnight idea.
Whoever came up with that is like, they're thinking.
Yes. Huh. And the high school, it's the cool thing is the high school tournaments are getting this to be the same way out there. And it's, dude, I'm so stoked about the high school fishing program.
Yeah, think of all the talent coming up, right?
Oh, yeah.
Just in the last 10 years, that's come on, huh?
For sure.
And these guys have an avenue now how to get into the sport, into the tournament fishing sport.
Yeah,
and
think of all
cool.
the seat time.
Yeah.
Facing some competition. Like, that's.
It's great to see. On a selfish side, I've been on the water multiple times fishing tournaments and are getting ready, practicing. A local come up and say, hey man, you know, they got a high school tournament coming up out here this weekend, 400 boats. And you're like,
great.
Why this weekend? It is cool, man. And they get to not only experience fishing that competition, but they also learn how to fish pressured waters and stuff, man. That throws people for a loop.
Yeah. But, hey, so 250 boats, how far does that pay back? Is it like
paid
one
the top
five?
50.
Okay.
Top 50. So yeah, I ended up finishing 53rd.
Bridesmaid again.
Mr. Four Fish, but whatever, dude. Whatever. Yeah. It's still fun, man. I just love getting out on that lake. And even though I probably shouldn't love it, I was talking to Cody Meyer the other day and he goes, dude, I hate Lake Mead.
Did he fish?
No, he was driving to another tournament back east and we're talking fantasy football as always. And he's just like, dude, I hate that lake. And I'm just thinking, dude, you're right.
He's a hardcore finesse guy, right?
Oh, yeah. And he's probably had some good tournaments there, but he knows how tough it is, man.
That's funny.
Yeah. But I don't hate it, dude. I could get my teeth kicked in another 10 times there, and I wouldn't hate it.
Yeah. What was your approach this year? Were you pushing like the reaction type bite, or how'd you approach Mead this year?
We had a massive north front come through, a north wind front, where in practice, the last 2 days, the second and third official days of practice, 2 days before the tournament, we had a massive north wind, like 30 mile an hour north wind in a super cold front. It got down into the 40s at night.
Oh, wow.
And the water temp dropped a good, I don't know, 5 to 10 degrees, depending
drastic
on where you were at.
Then.
Seriously.
Wow.
And
yeah.
Dude, if you're back east, we were talking about it, if you're back east, a lot of times that kicks fish into the fall mode. It's
not
a good
out here
thing.
Though.
No, those fish, and I think it's because our weather's so consistent out west. they're just used to it. So when you get weather like that, it freaks them out, man. And the topwater bite was almost non-existent. And a lot of times in that tournament, that's what guys make their living on, is that they're topwater most of the tournament. And the topwater bite, a few guys caught a few on it, but I never caught one on it. And I almost just put it away. So I banked on it being tougher and hoping it was going to take 9 or 10 a day to win. I fished mid lake and I ended up the first day I caught a limit, but I didn't feel super about it. So the second day I just started running all over the place too much. So, you know, you get away with running around, but I ran too much. The third day I finally settled in into an area that I know has big fish, has that more fertile water. And I had my best day of the week a little too late, but you know, I picked mid lake and that was going to be my plan, but a couple of those practice days, dude, that first day it blew. I was like, I hadn't spent that much time up there. Some guys will spend 5 to 10 days practicing.
Pre-fishing it hard.
Yeah, I had 3 or 4 days, so I had to go get out on the water. I couldn't take that time off. And
did you get a little wet?
Yeah, I got a little wet. I got tossed around a little bit. It was a nasty day, and you're just so limited on what you can do. Like, you know, fishing main lake's not an option, right? You can't fish a point. You can't fish an outside, anything on the outside. You got to get back into a protected creek.
Yeah.
But, you know, thankfully I was able to, you know, on a day like that, you got to look at the wind direction and just try to find a launch ramp where you're
remotely close to where you want to be.
Yeah, close to where you want to go. It's protected. And instead of 6 and 7 footers, they're just 3 and 4 footers. And you can survive that. I mean, dude, you get in 6, 7 footers.
Trailer,
which it sounds
and your
like
boat
a lot.
Becomes...
It happens out there, you know? And you're going to jack up your boat. You're going to,
just not realistic.
You're going to destroy all your equipment. Even on that one day, even in the 3 or 4 footers, I started noticing these little plastic pieces on the front deck of my boat. I'm like, what are these? You know, little broken pieces of plastic. I'm like, it's not going to fix itself, whatever it is. I found out they were trolling motor mount bushings.
Oh, okay.
Not a big deal, but I didn't know for sure. And it reminds me, I need to get that handled. But it happened to Sean Coffey too. He he texted me. He's like, hey, dude, you got any Makota parts? I'm like,
If I did, I'd be using them.
Yeah.
There's not a lake that's harder on boats, in my opinion.
No doubt. What's the worst thing you ever did to a boat on Lake Mead, dude?
Well, I lost power on a motor in the middle of, I don't even remember. What's the big giant basin? The Virgin Basin, I think, right?
Yeah. It's the one straight south of the Overton.
Yes. Yeah. So I was in the middle of the Virgin and we broke down and get towed in, and it was actually a plug that just came apart and we could have pushed it together and started the motor and got in, but we ended up getting towed. I mean, it was forever.
You got towed in. Was it rough?
It was fairly rough, and it was so long ago. This was, I had a 1989 Champion boat.
Oh, man.
So, and I had that boat for 3 years, so it was anywhere from, it was early 90s when it happened, so. But, yeah, big giant waves out there, and it just knocked that plug loose, and my lack of knowledge of the motor, but.
Well, hey, man, I'd be in the same boat.
Yeah. It's just funny when guys take their cowling off and they're looking at their motor like they're going to fix it. Yeah. Really?
I got this. We're good.
It's me, dude. Yeah.
There's just, what's the point, right?
So, yeah.
But, yeah, Mead's gnarly. I mean, I've been on Powell, too. Powell's very similar. I was with Derek Yamamoto one time, and literally his trolling motor was brand new, and when we got in, it was just completely useless.
Trolling motors get thrashed.
Just thrashed. Yep. Yep.
Have you guys been on either of those lakes during like monsoon season? And like, I've been on Powell a few times where it's just a chill, calm, nice day. And like someone switches a light, the light switch goes off, and then it's just like blowing and nasty. My brother and I were fishing in Navajo Creek, which is just kind of up from Antelope. And it switched back and switched back and switched back. And one of those little squalls descended upon us. You can't go anywhere, dude, because it's so narrow and it's, you know, it's just cliff walls. Yep. So it's not like you can go in to get any harbor. We were just trying to idle in the middle of that channel for like 20 or 30 minutes while it was just like the spin cycle in a washing machine, dude. I mean, it's just like raining, hailing, blowing,
lightning popping off.
Oh, yeah. I was like...
The time I was with Derek when he broke his trolling motor, we were actually... The reason I was riding with him is because we were pre-fishing for a team tournament, and we're all the way up in the San Juan, and my boat broke down up there. So I rode in with him, left my boat up there. Me and my partner fished the tournament. We ended up towing it in. We brought a small prop, and we were able to get my boat on plane, towing it back in. But the night before that, we ended up camping up there because we were pre-fishing.
Yeah.
And we wanted to get 2 days. That's a long run, right?
Oh, it's a heck of a run.
And we actually got like 2 inches of snow on us. So this was like, it was like in April. Oh. And just to give you an idea of how cold that water was coming in, I mean, it snowed on us the night before. And so, I mean, that's dangerous when you're in 6, 7, 8 foot waves. When
it's that bad, that happens.
Yeah.
So it was the cold factor. It was pretty crazy.
Yeah, those two lakes, they're big enough, and they've just got the potential for weather. Like,
you absolutely have to respect what
completely. It's probably, you know, I've never fished any of the Great Lakes, but it's probably when you prep for a tournament on one of those giant bodies of water, too, right? It's just kind of like, well,
you're dealing with big water.
Yeah. Cross your T's, dot your I's, and be prepared.
You gotta have extra everything.
Yeah,
you're getting your boat prepared is probably more important than your tackle and something like that. You know what I mean? If you're going to use like Rob talked about, a smaller prop, probably a smaller prop on your boat, so you can, you know, get up and over the waves and it's not blowing out. And just make sure everything's tightened down and stuff still just gets trashed, man. I mean, after a day like that, your battery charger gets ripped out. Your batteries are just it's brutal on a boat, but
yeah, they haven't invented a suspension system on a boat yet, right? So it goes up and slams down and goes up and slams down.
But that's how important it is to, when you're rigging your boat, to, you know, like
double check that stuff.
Yeah. Just really secure stuff. So
on your trolling motor, TH Marine makes like a pretty cool little deal that actually latches your trolling motor down. So like when you lift it and drop it, it's kind of a pain every time you lift it because you've got to put your toe on that thing and drop it one extra step. But dude, you get in a situation like that one time and it's worth it. I know so many guys that have literally had their trolling motors ripped out of the front of their boat.
Just hitting a wave.
From hitting those waves.
As soon as you secure it like that, it becomes part of the boat and it doesn't even move.
Yeah,
so
it's locked in, dude. Yeah, there's no play.
No flex.
Yeah. Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's amazing the improvements in the equipment over the years.
Trial and error, right? Yeah. You know, learning what to do.
Exactly. Yeah. I had been, one time I was, this is going back almost 10 years, probably, I was in, the lower basin. We were fishing a tournament. It was an ABA championship and we knew it was going to blow with my buddy Gary. So we thought, well, we'll be cool. We're going to just kind of, we needed like probably 11 or 12 pounds to do well. This was the second day of the tournament. Anyways, we'd fished Greg's the first day, caught like 7 pounds. So we decided to fish Vegas Wash. And I didn't realize how nasty it could get just in that main basin right there. I mean, I thought, oh, we're only 5 miles from the ramp. Dude, that 5 miles turned into like 50. It was, and the thing about me too, like, it's obviously a big, expansive piece of body of water, but just the power and speed of the winds on that place seem to be more intense than other places.
It does.
It's just windier.
Even more so than Powell. I've fished Powell a lot, and I've had a lot better conditions overall at Powell than
that's
I have at Mead, and it's literally one lake down, right?
Yeah,
it's
lower elevation desert, maybe, right? Because I think Powell's probably a little bit higher.
It is
quite a bit higher. Like, I know Page is like 4,000.
Well, it snowed
feet
on you, right? Like, definitely does. Yep. Mead is, when you look at like the peak summer months and you see like the hottest parts of the state, that area along the Colorado River is a beast.
Yeah, it's
so
just
I wonder
a different
if it's,
climate.
It is, you know,
sure.
I think
it rips,
gnarly.
You get so often, dude, 30, 40. I'm not kidding, dude. 50 mile an hour straight line
sustained
winds. Sustained.
Right.
Yeah, they're
not
gusts. And those waves, they stack so steep when it's blown like that. Like the Great Lakes, the waves are just big swells. And,
so
and
you can
navigate a 5 foot wave on Great Lakes pretty easily, dude. But you get 5 footers on Mead and you literally,
you're pounding,
you're just vertical the whole way.
You feel, dude, that one day, I've never felt like it before, but I felt like we were going to flip. Like, you know, normally, dude, you're in a bass boat and your props got bite. You feel like, okay, you can climb the waves and go slow. Just stick the bow up. But they were so steep and it was blowing so hard. We were going into the wind that when you would come up over the top of this, you would like pucker up expecting to flip backwards. Dude, we got a couple miles. We ended up just hiding behind an island and it got no better. So after sitting behind this island for like an hour, like, well, here
it
we go again.
Is, right? Yeah.
We finally got there and, oh, Gary, dude, was like, he's like, I can't breathe. I can't, because there was so much mist in the air.
Yeah.
That,
was it cold?
Adrenaline.
No, it was October.
Really?
It was fine, but there was so much mist from the waves in the air that, and maybe he was getting claustrophobic because you couldn't see the land.
Yeah.
That, he couldn't breathe, dude. So I'm like, oh, God.
Well,
this is not.
Dude, when you go down in a swell and all you see is water. You cannot see land outside of that.
That way. Added to it. That's stressful.
I was just going to say, so you got some adrenaline pumping, right? You can only white knuckle it for so long before your body's like, I'm done. Like, I'm spent.
Yeah. I've had my rods just wiped off the front deck of my boat before.
Sponsors, right? Yeah. That's when you're like, yeah.
Yeah, brutal. But yeah, so next year, Josh, you don't know your schedule. You don't know if you're going to be able to make it back to the open or... I mean, is there a chance you'll do it again or?
For sure, man. I'll fish it every year I can. Hopefully I can. Yeah
but scheduling is always with your other circuit.
Cup or anything on top of it, if I make one of those cups and it's over it, I'll fish it for sure. But what I told you about this, Rob, but so the guy that won this year, he played his card so well when it came time to like tell everyone how he won and what he did. Usually
he had a nice polished story.
Oh, well, you guys win this thing and they're so pumped up. They just say what they did. You know, obviously, dude, honestly, I'm not just trying to say this. I'd probably would be that way too, because it's almost never the same two times in a row anyways. And Burry used to always say, he's like, hey man, if you beat me, I put up my money, I deserve to know how I got beat. But anyways, this guy, dude, I do give him props for it. He had like the most generic response. He basically said, I caught him like mid lake on a variety of baits.
Good for him.
Yeah,
I plead the fifth.
He's gonna fish it again next year, and he was second last year, so whatever.
Yeah,
he's definitely got
something going on.
He understands the lake very well
at this time of year, which is funny because it's a different time of year than normal.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of guys are a little off right now for the October.
The new norm. Yeah. You got guys that have done very well for the past 10, 20 years in the summertime, and now it's a fall tournament. And it's been no fail. The last three opens, it's been like super good early fall fishing, topwater bites popping off. And then right before the tournament, heavy north wind, hard cold front, and then boom, you're almost on the edge going into early winter pattern for sure. So it's
as
totally
a fan
different.
And spectator of that, not a direct participant this time, it makes it so much more interesting, right?
Because when it's tough like that?
Yeah. Because it's just so much less predictable. Whatever sporting event you're watching, you want something to be unpredictable, right? Because that just creates the buzz and the entertainment factor.
That's a good point,
man.
More challenge to it. It's not so much who can fish the most pockets with a topwater. It's who can figure out this new challenge that they've been presented with. You know?
Yeah, because that's kind of like our big tournament out west, right?
I mean, it is,
for sure.
US Open
is our biggest prize money, obviously 250 boats. So that's cool. That's our...
How much did the smallmouth play? To be honest with you, I haven't fished Mead since their smallies...
became relevant.
Yeah.
Well, let's go. Okay, so let's talk about just like the lake in general, how the smallmouth population is, how the health of the lake in general real quick. And smallmouth over the last several years are a big part of it. They actually probably are dang close to half the fish that get weighed in tournaments. There are a ton. But, dude, it's a lot like Powell. There are so many 10-inch smallmouth in that lake. It's
hundreds
incredible.
Of hundreds.
Okay. And if you go back, like when we first started fishing this place, I was there with Nick several years ago, and I remember there was a high water year and there were so many little fish, and we're like, dude, I can't wait to be back here in 2 years. It's going to be amazing.
And all of those fish are still
they never grow. I mean, was it that way 20 years ago, dude? Could you catch Mead and Powell? Could you catch just a billion 10 inchers?
No. So are you saying they were all small on Mead?
Yeah, but both, dude. I mean, Powell's full of, dude. Think about the amount of 10 and 12 inch smallmouth in Powell.
Yeah, I mean, both.
Tons, right?
Yeah, there's a lot, but I remember Powell being just, I mean, there was a lot of smallies and there was a reason for the 20 fish limit on the smallmouth there. But, you know, I wouldn't say you'd catch a bazillion little ones.
Interesting.
You caught some quality fish, you know. But in Mead, I mean, Mead was just always. I mean, you never caught a lot of small fish. You never caught a lot of fish, period.
Dude,
you know?
I guess it has changed. I mean, in the last 10 years, there are, if you get in the right area, not so much, right? If you get in the right area, you're catching the right ones.
Yeah.
But throughout most of the lake, I'm not kidding, dude, it's probably 5 to 10 to 1 on non-keepers to keeper.
No kidding.
Yeah, you can easily, tons of guys blanked and caught 30 fish.
Yeah, I can say, I've never ever caught that many fish and not had. I mean,
one
they were
keeper.
Just. Yeah, I mean, I.
That's. I guess you were doing the right things, dude. But the lake could be a lot different.
It's just a lot
just
different
over the last couple of years.
I just don't
think
there was that many fish in there, and the ones that were there were decent, you know, and not that they were big, but they were keepers at least, you know.
Yeah.
So, and yeah, it's completely different.
It's got a pile of striper in it too. And the stripers have, you know, the whole Colorado River is just overrun with them. And it's funny, like some of, like Mojave's got the giant stripers. Havasu's got some really big stripers. Mead probably has them, but you don't really hear about them being caught. Boy, it's got a lot of little ones. And what happens is on years where there's not, the shad population isn't quite as prominent, the stripers have to come in and do what largemouth and smallmouth do. So it makes it really challenging.
Even more pressure on those fish.
Yeah, then, man, right? It was happening this year. You'd be in the back of a pocket and you'd catch a striper on a chatterbait. And you're like, dang, man, that's not, you know, you catch them on a drop shot, down eating crocs. I'm serious, dude.
They're just eating whatever's available, huh?
What an incredible fish, though. I mean, like, it's a nuisance in this particular example, but it's like, imagine how adaptive that freaking fish is, that it can just switch over to that.
Yeah, they survive, dude.
Yeah.
They do what they got to do.
That's amazing to think that they can just turn it on and start eating crawfish if they're desperate enough.
They got to be mowing over the little bass too, right?
Oof. Oh yeah, that's for sure. Yeah, there's little, I mean, dude, any smallmouth under probably 8 inches is not safer than the striper, right? Right.
Yeah.
What's your take? Like in the springtime, Mead takes, you know, 16, 18 pounds a day to win a tournament there. Do you think this time of year, a lot of those better quality fish are out running with the stripers?
100%.
Yeah.
Yeah. You hear about that a lot. Yeah. And yeah, I guess we know it for a fact. That's, and you hear stories about, and we've all seen it, where you throw into a striper boil and you catch a 3+ pound smallmouth.
Right.
Or happened to one of my buddies this past week. He was just sitting on a reef, and out of nowhere on his graph appeared like 4 nice arches or streaks below his boat. And he said, oh, dude, they're probably striped. But he dropped his drop shot down anyways. 3.5 pound largemouth. And caught again, dude. He fished
just
it several
pelagic,
more times,
right?
You know. So there's a couple ways to attack it. Like one thing, I've got a couple places where I'm in a zone where I know a lot of big smallmouth live. And there are just a few long points that run way out into the lake. And you fish them 9 out of 10 times, there's nothing on them. But so you don't stay too long, but they're always worth stopping on, because several times over the last several years, I've run into a smallmouth pushing bait up onto them. And you'll see that same scenario and you'll drop and catch them. And happened to me in 2017. I found him in practice, and then I fished it like 5 times in the tournament, never caught him. The last day this year, I was like, had kind of nothing to lose on that last day. So I'm like, I was running by it. I said, let's pull in a fish. And we caught 4 pretty nice smallmouth in like 15 minutes. And then we fished all 3 of the points for another 3 hours, never got another bite, you know? So, but that's what's happening over and over and over again on that lake. They're staying in open water. And if you could be lucky and like be in a cove or pocket or on a point when they push up and eat, you're going to capitalize on it.
It's real.
Because generally getting a lake mead fish to bite is not that hard.
Getting
your bait in front of them is hard.
That's exactly the perfect way to put it.
Yeah.
They're not really, I mean, they got tournament pressure, but those fish that are swimming around in open water and the lake's so big.
How,
dude,
could they be pressured?
They're not pressured.
Right? You can't find them.
No.
They're
consistently
dumb.
Yeah.
They're dumb. I mean, you could throw a drop shot into a boil and catch them.
Yeah.
They'll
bite
anything, dude.
Yeah.
Because they're hungry, right?
Like, yeah. Well, we're talking about it. Yeah. They're
boils down to a shortage of food.
A crawfish, dude. Yeah. Yeah. There's a shortage of food for sure.
Yeah.
Cool.
It's a wild one. Yeah. But that's enough about Lake Mead. We've been talking about it for 30 minutes. So. What have you guys been up to, dude? Rob's in the middle of a big move. Nick, you just went back to Wyoming. We'll get to your move, dude, because we're going to talk about some tackle. But how's your trip, dude?
Yeah, it was good. You know, early October in Wyoming is that weird, I think they call it an Indian summer, where like you can have highs in the 70s consistently, and then the next day it'll drop 30, 40 degrees and start snowing. And that's kind of like the first day of winter, which actually, so I don't know if you guys saw that, but Denver, the day we left, Denver had a record-breaking temperature differential drop. They went from like 82 for a high the day before. Then this storm front came through, and I think their high the next day was like 27 or 28 degrees. I mean, we're talking like,
never seen that before.
We're talking like 50, 60 degrees drop in 24 hours.
Wow.
Global warming. Just kidding. But so for us, the day we left was that. And so we had a pretty adventurous flight out. I'm sure I've had turbulence in my life similar to this, but it has been a long time. And so this felt like the scariest flight I've ever been in. And
you had the whole family with you too,
yeah,
right?
I did. Yeah. And you know, we got a 3-month-old, so you're doing the lap infant thing where you're kind of just like bear hugging and holding on through the turbulence. It's always a bad start, right? So leaving out of Casper, Wyoming, they have an airport, but it's small. They're all commuter jets. And the storm was coming in, and the hour by hour forecast said by like 6 p.m. is when the snow was going to be coming. Well, our flight left at 5:30, right? So you can see where the story's going. So we all board, and we're sitting there, and there's no traffic. So it's like normally when you get on a plane there, you just take off and you blast off. So we're heading into Denver. We sat on the tarmac for an hour watching them de-ice the plane three times before we took off.
It's a little unnerving, huh?
Dude, and the pilot, the reason why we're sitting there is like, well, Denver just closed down again because they have wind gusts up to 65. Jeez. So the whole airport shut down. So in my mind, I'm like, dude, my sister lives here. Just call the flight. I've got a 3-month-old, a 6, and a 4-year-old. Like, we're good. Like, just call the
flight.
Yeah,
we'll wait.
Dude, and the hostess is like serving alcoholic beverages. Like, lots they opened them. It up. Dude, they're just, that's what's cool on those little planes is that it's like everyone's just, you know, friendly and hanging out. So it was like, just call it. So at the end of it, the second time frame is like, okay, you know, the DIA has opened up. We're going to make a go at it. And I remember being like, no, what are you talking about? Like, that's a horrible plan. It's much easier to take off in a plane than it is to land it. And I'm not a pilot, but even I know that. So sure enough, man, like we get ready to take off and they throttle down. And we always sit in the back of the plane. You could feel the tire spinning. Because there was no traction on the runway. It was so icy.
Oh, my goodness.
Like, it kind of did, like, that thing where, like, it squats and wobbles a little bit before it takes off. So we get up in the air, and everything's good, man. It's like a 40-minute flight from Casper to Denver. We're probably 15, 20 minutes out, and the stewardess is taking her final approach to grabbing trash and everything. And, like, out of nowhere, we hit turbulence. I would imagine, like, the plane was moving up and down 40, 50 feet in the air. Like, the poor woman, the stewardess, it caught everyone off guard. So she had to hit the deck. She's holding on to the armrest. I'm an aisle seat. She's holding on to my armrest as we're going up and down through this turbulence. I have my hands on her shoulders because she is genuinely off the ground in these bumps. It was so much.
Is she keeping it cool or is she freaking out?
She was a straight up, like, stewardess of the millennium, man. Like, straight faced, like, holding it together. Wow. Like, not freaking out at all.
Thank God, dude.
Thank God. And this overhead storage bin opened up. So I'm like holding on to her, trying to close that thing. My wife had our 3-month-old, you know, so I'm freaking out because I'm like, I'm in front of them. I'm not even next to them. So I can't cover them. Plus, I'm holding on to the stewardess. Fortunately, I'd become really good buddies with the guy who was sitting across from them. He's working in the oil fields there and just a nice, cool guy. And so I look back and I was like, dude, will you please take care of my family? Like, I can't get back there. And so he was awesome, man. That's cool. Like leaning over and like holding, you know, making sure my wife was okay and my son. And
wow.
I mean, I'm like praying because it was intense. And we had probably 10 or 15 minutes of this turbulence where it was like the worst roller coaster you've ever been on. And, you know, a 6 and a 4-year-old, they're having fun. They're like hands in the air and yelling. And I'm like, shut up, sit down, tighten your seatbelt and don't say anything. And, you know, and then ironically, like the landing, everyone at that point was like, eventually the stewardess was able to crawl back up to the front, buckle in and prepare. We landed pretty uneventfully, but I tell you what, man, like it was white knuckles to the max.
What's the stewardess take on that after it's all said and done?
She was so cool. She's like, you know, like, well, it's just part of the job. We hit turbulence. And I'm like, wow.
So they're used to it in those little planes.
They probably are, you know. And as a non-pilot and as a non-professional in that industry, it seemed like it was a lot to me. They're probably just like, yeah. It's kind of like hearing Josh talk about taking on giant waves at Mead and being like, well,
just no big deal.
2 hours of 8-footers, my back hurt, but it was okay. And if I would have been driving the boat, I'd be like, I'm going to die. You know, so it's probably one of those things. But yeah, that was enough that I wanted to rent a motorhome initially, so I think the next time that comes up, I'm driving.
Yeah.
Screw that.
Yeah, that's brutal.
Insane, dude. Yeah, those little planes, some people talk about how they freak them out, dude, and I guess hadn't really been too worried. But
I think it doubled down because we had a 3-month-old, you know what I mean? Sure. If I would have been by myself or it was just my wife and I, you know, like whatever, but when you've got a couple of little kids with you and like, you're enough thinking that like this could be the end. I was like, who do we have in our will that's going to take care of our kids if we? Then I was like, oh, no, don't think about that. We're good. Damn,
you don't expect that in October either.
Yeah, well, you know, you just hit those weird weather patterns. We were there for 6 days, and every day the high was in the 70s, and the day we left, the high was like 31. And Casper is windy. It's like the Lake Mead of Wyoming. I mean, the freaking wind every day is just blowing 35 to 40 sustained.
That's just Wyoming as a whole, isn't it?
Dude, it totally is. Yeah. Like, that's just they say Nebraska sucks, and that's why it's so windy. You're there, because right. They're just pulling the air to them. But no disrespect to Nebraska. But yeah, it was a lot. It was definitely you hit the ground and you're thankful for that.
We're going to get hate mail from Nebraska.
Yeah. Hey, my mom's from there. So
there's a lot of good fishing back there too. Were you itching to fish when you're, cause I know you fished a ton back there in the past.
Yeah. You know, Casper does, you know, they have, they call it the Miracle Mile, right? So they've got a lot of that glorified bobber fishing with a fly rod, but it's epic. You know, this time of year, I don't think you're nymphing as much. We weren't able to line it up this trip, but, yeah, there's a really cool stretch there where you have to hike in. It's between two reservoirs, but it's a pretty gnarly hike down into it, and the fishing's awesome.
That's cool.
I mean, like, you catch big trout a lot of different ways, and it's pretty tight.
That's one of many Miracle Miles, dude.
I know, right? That's probably the most overused label of water, but that's what they call it. Let's see.
There's Miracle Miles everywhere. I think I've been to, like, 10 lakes that have, like, a government wash.
That's why Greg was differentiating himself when he named Greg's basin. He's like, this is my basin, bitch. Like, it's Greg's. Ain't no government. Ain't no miracle here. It's Greg.
That's hilarious.
Two G's.
Keep it simple. Rob, awesome, man.
Rob, how's the move going, man? We're sitting here in your house, and it's
getting empty in a hurry,
empty.
Isn't it? Yeah. No, we're under contract now, and fortunately, we're going to close pretty soon. And yeah, moves are brutal, but I'm looking at the bright side of it. We're just purging a bunch of stuff, and
there's a light at the end of the tunnel.
Yeah,
right.
I've made a bunch of runs to a dumpster, and I've made a bunch of runs to the donation center, and you know, moved what matters, I guess. But yeah, it is what it is. It's we've lived in this house for 12 years now, so you accumulate a lot of stuff over 12 years. And tons of fishing tackle.
Dude, your shop is full of fishing stuff, so I'm sure that alone was a nice exercise in patience.
Yeah, and you know, my boat becomes real full with a lot of stuff that it shouldn't have in it. And just, you know, I had shelves of stuff and found new tackle that I hadn't obviously had purchased at some point.
Right?
I feel like you hide a lot of your tackle because I know you gotta have.
I don't though. I'm the weirdest. Like I've fished for 30 plus years, and I'm the guy that goes to the tackle shop and buys two bags of worms. Nice. I should buy six bags, or you know what I mean? I'm just weird like that, because I know if I buy six bags and put four bags away and use two, I'll go buy six more because I just not going to dig far enough to find that other four bags.
Yeah.
I'm kind of weird like that, but I don't know.
I do admire, though. You see, like, those dream fishing garages. And Josh's, yours is pretty legit, where someone will set up, like, a pegboard.
Oh, yeah.
And then they've got that organizational OCD where everything looks like freaking Bass Pro Shops aisles. Like, your garage is pretty legit, man.
Well, I'm kind of there, man, as far as that goes. But I also, I'm also where Rob's talking, where I've got just totes and totes. You know, it's just... We may have to do a couple of these podcasts in my garage in the meantime while we're waiting for Rob's new place, and we're going to have bags of baits falling on us while we do the podcast, man. But I don't know. You must be organized, man. Cause
I'm not.
You walk into Rob's garage and you don't see tackle. He builds rods. So you see a lot of rod building stuff, but I don't know where his tackle is, dude. And I know he's got,
it's
offside.
There's a shelf that's empty right now. I'll show you a little bit, but
I want to see it.
It was covered over with fly fishing stuff and all my plastics and stuff. So it's unfortunate moves make you go through this stuff. If you could just like do it every year, you would be so much more organized, but it's hard to get yourself to do it.
It's a necessary evil.
It really is. I mean, cause like I said, the plastics, if you keep them in air condition, which I was fortunate my shop was air conditioned, they last a lot longer, but they still get, you know, kind of tore up when they're sitting around forever. But I mean, do you guys have problems with that? And I mean,
well, I just recently moved too, so you're not getting any sympathy from me, but when I did I had a little shed and it was not air conditioned and everything took a toll, man. Like I freaking big spools of line, you know, fluoro and stuff. Yeah. That pretty sure is,
you know, do you think fluoro takes a beating from heat? What's your take? I always feel like fluorocarbons. So much more so than like monofilament just turns to dust.
It literally feels dusty when you run your fingers down it. Yeah. You know, and the fluoro, dude, that's a great question. And you literally would probably have to test it.
Yeah.
You know, I keep it in a cooler.
Do you really?
Like my good line in a cooler. So, dude, I mean, it's still getting hot because my garage is not air conditioned.
But it's more insulated than just exposed.
It's in a cooler. So it's probably a little bit better. But I'd probably be better keeping my big bulk spools inside. It's just not convenient sometimes to do that, man, especially when you're on the run a lot. And I leave it in my truck. So when I'm on the road, dude, it's,
then it's like 150 in there.
Yeah, I think about how hot is in the truck.
Your freaking camper shell back there. Exactly. It's just a
Have you ever had a bad spool of fluorocarbon?
I don't feel like I ever have. I've never broken a fish off and said it was the heat that got me. You know, it's possible. And you know, you can, the way I judge line is I literally look at it and feel it.
Yeah.
And I've got some spools of fluorocarbon. All my spools of Trilene, I've got like, they've got the date when they were made. Uh-huh. It's just on the sticker.
Okay. Gotcha.
So, some of these bulk spools, I look at them and I've got some now that are 2013, 2014, 2015. I just give them to kids or whatever because, I mean, dude, they're still getting, they wouldn't be using fluorocarbon otherwise. So it's way better than what they'd be using. But I'm not going to trust a spool that's 7 years old in a tournament.
On your livelihood.
I'd say if it's, you know, for me anyways, if it's 2 or 3 years or newer, I'd feel really good about it. But yeah, if it's bad, you can usually feel it. You could see it cracking. You could see it's dusty. You could feel it when you're
just kind of like a brittle feel to it or something.
It totally does, man. Uh-huh. I mean, is that how you guys see it?
Yeah, I think that makes sense.
Yeah, I mean, I've never really had a problem with fluorocarbon. I remember years back we had, there was an off brand of fluorocarbon. I can't remember what brand it was, but it was pretty rough. And it was
like that new. We won't throw them under the bus, but I know what it is.
Yeah, it would shatter. Like, it was not good, whatever they had going on. But
the recipe was missing.
Yeah, it was wrong.
Want to say it, dude, but I'm not going to.
No, don't say it. but I've never had problems with Berkeley. I've never had problems with, like, the Yamamoto Sukhoi. That stuff was pretty legit. But I use Berkeley 100% fluorocarbon now, 100% of the time, just because it's one available and reasonably
consistent.
Priced. Yeah, consistent.
Did you find anything like venomous insects or anything like that going through those archives of tackle?
No, just the other day though, I picked up a box and had a spider run up my arm and up my neck.
Wow.
And like
that fast.
And I grabbed him and just
was
got
he
locked.
Big and fangy was, or was he just a
he was just nasty. I don't I'm not even afraid of spiders, but this one like was like they're crawling on your neck. It's not cool. Dude,
when I moved, so I had a little stint there on an irrigated island. County island, excuse me, an irrigated acre on a county island. And in the desert where there's like -1 inch of rain per year, when you live somewhere that every 2 weeks it's under like 6 inches of water,
yeah, you got
as
some
you flood
stuff.
Oh my God, things that like prehistoric bugs were in that house. And so then I have this freaking shed next to where the irrigation ports were in my backyard. I mean, it was like a breeding ground for black widows, scorpions, wolf spiders. I mean, to the point where like I wouldn't touch anything in that house without like gloving up and like I was going to cook meth, man. I was ready for like an apron on, and, like a face mask. Like I don't really do the whole things that bite you to begin with.
But, Breaking Bad.
Yeah, like Nick White. So
he's watching Breaking Bad, by the way.
So it's all fresh.
Are you really watching that right
he's
now?
He's into it right now.
Whatever's relevant today, 3 years from now is when I'll get on it, and then I'll be like, dude, have you ever seen this? And then everyone looks at me like
3 years ago.
Yeah, sweet. Show me your rock. Where do you live?
If, like, if you think that's from 3 years ago, you're crazy, bro. I'm talking like
13.
10.
Yeah.
That's funny.
But that new movie came out on Netflix, so you can't watch that without, you know what I mean? You got to set it up. Anyways, screw you guys. I'd say F you, but this is a family podcast. But I remember as I was moving stuff out of that, oh my gosh, man. One time I put my hands on a tote of just crap fishing tackle. And I look over and sure enough, like 12 inches away from where my left hand is on this tote on the next one over, I think it was a wolf spider, whatever, a brown recluse. That's
those
the one.
Do some damage too.
Dude, and they're like the diameter of like a coffee cup. I mean, it was big. You could have put a leash on that thing and walked it. And like all 35 eyes of it were just looking up at me like, touch me. Dare you. And so, No, he was gone in a heartbeat, man. Yeah. He looked at me, I looked at it, and it bailed into one of the crevices of the next thing that I was going to have to pick up. And I was like, oh, we'll meet again. We didn't, fortunately.
Yeah, but I was pretty fortunate with the creature stuff.
But yeah, you know, you probably have pest service and stuff. I didn't.
Occasionally,
Dude, you're crazy to not have pest service in that place.
I feel like it probably would have just been like, not even, you would have to like hire the Orkin guy personally to like live on that place and just constantly spray.
It wasn't even worth it.
Dude, we had cockroaches and we are super clean people. You had cockroaches like the size of your middle finger crawling out of the ground from that water. I mean, it was mind-blowing.
So you relate that just to irrigation, huh?
I think so. I think water is the source of life. I mean, I had these weird, like, you know, those dung beetles that live in Africa with like the crazy pinchers on the front of their head and like their butt. Dude, these types of beetles would just emerge and like walking through our backyard. It was crunchy.
So how'd the disclosure go when you're...
It was extensive. There is a section on the real estate contract in Arizona that talks about, have you seen like pests and so on and so forth. They give you one line. I was like, I need an addendum for that. Let's see. I've seen rhinoceros beetles, 17 species of spiders, and that was last week.
Rhinoceros beetles, dude. That's crazy.
God, is that a thing?
I don't know, but it should be, because from what I saw, it was big.
Man, I had a box of tackle I had given to this kid, man, teenager, just a great kid, super into fishing. And I see an occasional scorpion in my house.
Now, did you hand him a box of scorpions?
I told him. I was like, dude, I've seen several scorpions, you know, over the past year in my garage, and this box has been laying on the ground. It's full of soft baits.
And they love cardboard. Was it a cardboard box?
Yeah. I said, just be careful when you're going through it. And dude, I'm at a tournament, and thank God, no. But he sent me a picture of a scorpion in the bottom of the box. It was a scorpion in the box and a live one. Oh. But he's much tougher with him than me. I said, dude, I'm so sorry, man. You know, I felt so bad. And he goes,
are you afraid of him?
Oh, dude. Yeah.
You're not?
No.
Jesus. I don't know why. It's that beard you have over there. You and Ranella should go out and eat meat or
scorpions
something.
Scorpions absolutely freak me out more than anything else. Dude, when I see a scorpion, I have to kill it like in such a way.
With fire?
I have to stay so far away from it and like take a shovel and cut them in half. And then take it and like throw it far from my house, man.
No kidding.
They freak me out big time.
You should see the scorpions we see when we mountain bike at night.
Oh, I can't imagine.
They come out on the trails and they're so big that you're going by them super fast.
You see them with just regular lights?
You just see them. Yeah, they're just big.
You should get a black light flashlight taped to your helmet, because I could only imagine the ground of the floor of the desert would be moving.
Yeah. Have you ever seen them on the walls at the lakes at night when you're fishing?
Uh-uh. Because you have a black light turned on?
Oh, little ones. Like Canyon Lake, the walls are crawling. When you use a black light,
every wall.
I mean, quite often, yeah. I mean, we could go out there tonight and see it. I'm
I don't
sure.
know how I've never noticed that, because I always fish with a black light. Maybe just so zoned in on the water.
Yeah,
just dang, so, man. Yep.
Well, that's a whole thing, right?
Josh,
don't
you
people
need to look
like...
around a little bit.
Yeah, laser
so
focus.
Focused on fishing.
Yeah, that's right. No, people do that. They grab a black light and then they go out and at night and like hunt scorpions in their backyard and stuff.
Oh, I do it. Yeah. I get one or two every night. You know, it's freaking me out, dude. When we moved into this house, I'm telling you, I've never had exposure to scorpions in my life. Even though I've lived out here, I've just been lucky.
Yeah, because certain areas have them and certain areas don't.
Totally. Bizarre, yeah.
I'm moving into an area that has them.
Yeah, you are.
Yeah,
yep.
Orchards, so.
Enjoy that.
Yeah.
Yeah. well, Nick's boy's been bit before, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Dude, my son got bit when he was 2 years old.
That's scary. But did it affect him?
Well, he had a mustache when he was born. So this kid is like, he did not get my genetics. So he is, that gives you an idea of the amount of testosterone flowing through this kid. He did not get it from me. But dude, he got stung by a scorpion. He cried. He was 2 years old. He cried for a couple minutes, shook it off, and never had another symptom from it. My dad got bit by a scorpion this year, and that poor guy was like headaches and woozy like affected by it for like 24 hours.
Wow, like, I was unaware
was
that happened.
Well, so everyone's reaction to it is different. Obviously, they're poisonous, and so it's just a matter of how much the poison affects you personally. But yeah, you don't want to get bit by one of those things, man. It'll make you feel some type of way for a while.
Yeah, I've been fortunate, so I say I'm not afraid of them. I guess if I get bit by one, I may be.
And the little ones are the worst. I've heard that they can't regulate the venom.
Right.
So, you know, like you're going to get the full shot, and then that's that. Where a big one, they kind of give you like a back-off shot, and then the next one's going to be coming.
Mm.
You know,
yeah, so. That's nasty. You don't want to see a mama around your house. You don't want to start seeing the little babies. They're everywhere, and there's going to be tons of.
Yeah.
All right. So one last story, scorpion story. We had Dennis Birch on. He gave us a pretty good scorpion story not too long ago, but this one's directly related to fishing, and we got to get him on to tell this story. He'll tell it better, but I'm going to tell it now anyways. It's worth listening to twice. And I talked about it a little earlier on the podcast, but Cody Meyer. He is fishing a tournament at Roosevelt, FLW tournament. I was at this tournament. This is 2009 or so. And he's rooming with his buddy, JR. And JR is a senior to him. JR is probably a good 20 years older than him or something. He's kind of like a mentor when Cody was younger. Cody would travel as the pro. JR would be the co-angler. And he was just there for the cause, just there to help Cody, basically. And dude, they're staying in a hotel that we call, it's not what it's really called, but we call it Scorpion Basin Inn. We've all seen the scorpions in this place. I've never been bit. You guys know where it's at.
Oh yeah.
And
slept on the floor there one time before I knew what its reputation was.
They're all crammed in there. And I think they've got four guys in this room. They're traveling from California. And Cody and JR are both in the bed because they don't want to sleep on the floor for that reason. They had already seen a couple or seen a tarantula or something, because there's tons of tarantulas there too. And they're getting ready to go to sleep the night before the tournament. And Cody's laying there, dude, and he just gets electrocuted by something. And he goes, and stands up, and he's freaking out. And he's like, I just got bit by something. I just got bit by something. And JR's like, Cody, shut up. Shut up. I'm trying to sleep. Come back to bed. They're just bed mites. They're just bed mites.
Because that's a better consolation.
That would be way worse.
He's like, they're just bed mites. Get back to bed. I'm trying to sleep. Got a fish in the morning. Oh. And he's like, I swear I got bit, dude. Oh, my God. It hurt so bad. It burned so bad. And he goes, Cody, shut up. Get back to bed. So Cody goes back to bed, dude. And he goes, dude, he says, I just laid down. Put these sheets back over me, and I'm looking up, praying to God that whatever bit me crawls over and bites
gets on the nose or something, right? Like right between the eyes.
Exactly. So, a couple minutes go by, and Cody's just like, dude, it's just burning and it hurts. And he's like, what was that? What was that? And all of a sudden, in the dark, he just hears a smack, and Jared goes, ah!
Bed mites that.
Yeah. Oh, that's
and it
awesome.
Was on his chest, dude. And he smacks this thing and it stings him on his hand.
No kidding.
And so dude, they turn the lights on and they're freaking out. And Jared's like, what was that? What was that? And Cody's like, I told you. And they turn the lights on, and sure enough, on the bed, there's a little scorpion crawling across the bed. So it got them both, dude. The next day, Cody's fishing, and he had a reaction to it. Like, it's not going to kill a grown man.
Good,
but
yeah.
Dude, it's like 90 degrees, and he's wearing like a hoodie, like shivering.
No
kidding.
He
still got a top 10, dude. He ended up getting a top 10 of the tournament, but it messed with him pretty good.
That was how my dad was, dude. Like, it affects you. Like,
I guess I just never knew that. I never knew it would. Interesting.
We got to have him on to tell it. He's told it to me a few times.
Hilarious.
It's a good story, dude, but we'll have him on to.
God, there's something about Roosevelt, Apache, that part of the Salt River chain. Dude, have you ever been fishing Apache? One night I was out there. Do you remember how many tarantulas we saw? You know what? I was with Tommy that time.
You
I
were seeing
there.
A bunch. Where were they?
On the road out, like driving back. Yeah. Up to, oh, my gosh.
They get on
like,
the road for the heat in the fall or something
yeah,
like
when
that.
You,
the
when
ground
you
is
see
moving
them,
with big,
yeah.
hairy spiders.
Yeah, when you hit that one time when you see them, you see a lot of them.
Gosh, it was cool because you know, I'm not as scared of them because they're not going to do anything
to you. Yeah, they're
pretty cool. My kid is completely afraid of them.
Is he?
Oh, yeah. We were deer hunting one time and we probably saw 20 that day, and he was just freaking out. We got back to camp. He runs into the camper. I'm making dinner on the grill out front, and one went across my foot, and he just, yeah. He
loses
was,
it.
He was losing it.
Yeah. But. Well, I mean, because it's a giant hairy spider.
But they're pretty cool.
Looking.
Yeah, they're cool.
Yeah. Yeah.
They'll do that. And the snakes, too, dude. I've seen that same time of year where the tarantulas are out. I remember coming back from a tournament registration one night, driving down Grapevine Road. Dude, we saw 10 rattlesnakes. Minimum 10 rattlesnakes
cruising.
On the blacktop.
Yeah.
I'm not kidding, dude.
But there's something to learn from that, right? Like nature, when things happen, just like fish. I mean, all of a sudden, all the fish are on the bank. They're all
they're
doing
there.
The same thing,
yeah,
right?
That's interesting.
There's
that's a
lot
point.
Of there's a reason why those snakes are all doing what they're doing, you
yeah,
know?
That's
and
a really
the tarantulas
good point.
Are doing what they're doing, and the and fish are doing what they're doing, and the deer are doing what they're doing.
It's an Arizona you know? Ecosystem thing too, right? Like we just don't have enough water. We don't have a lot of water. So where there is water, and I think that's why my
true.
Irrigated backyard was like National Geographic yeah. Channel yeah. because it's like, hey, the source of life right
yep.
here. Come
for
here.
Sure.
Yep.
Yeah. I've got a buddy that lives just in a regular neighborhood in Mesa, and he had just asinine amount of scorpion. We couldn't figure it out, dude. And
you have an irrigation lake or something?
Yeah. Well, one night he's like, I'm going to take a black light and see where they're coming from. He looks all through his backyard and he sees his normal amount, 10 or something on every search, you know? And he goes, I'm going to see what's behind my house. And he goes, oh yeah, they had one of those planters, like a neighborhood, like welcome to Superstition Springs.
Okay.
And they had the planter with all the plants on it. Dude, he said there were hundreds in that thing. And that's where his house backed up to.
Yeah.
That was
the source of them, huh?
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow. Crazy.
Yeah. It's, that's why I'm happier on the water, dude. I'm happy around the water and away from those.
Until one of those snakes swims over to your boat and climbs in it, right? Yeah. You hear those awesome stories. It's
never happened to me, but it happened. It does. Right on. Well, hey, any final thoughts before we wrap this thing up, guys?
Well, let's transition into some sweet fall fishing. You know, you're going hunting soon.
Right? I am. I'm going to spend once we get closed on the house, I'm probably going to hunt in Jordan.
Don the camo and start killing Bambi.
Yeah, I'm trying to at least.
Cool, man.
Yep, should be fun. So
it's gonna be hard to pin Rob down over the next couple months.
Yeah. It is.
Gotta
sell
service a lot. But that's cool, man. That's what
I'm looking forward to. Yeah. So
that's awesome. Well, yeah, good luck with the move. And Nick, your move is not far out either, is it, dude? How far?
Oh, a couple months, 6 weeks or something like that. So we'll be.
But you're in the transition home right now, so it shouldn't be too bad, right?
The purge has happened.
Yeah.
So hopefully we'll be ultralight.
Yeah.
We'll be like crappie rig.
Yeah.
You know, ultralight move. So hopefully.
Crappie rig.
You got any tournaments coming up, Josh? This is kind of your off season, right?
Yeah, that was the last big one for the year. I'm going to fish just a Wild West team tournament at Pleasant in a few weeks. And other than that, man, just get ready, get my new boat rigged. I've got another Nitro ordered. It comes in December.
Nice.
And just that's a whole process to do. So just do that, do a couple sponsor things. And I don't know, man, I'm nursing some type of, I don't know, tendonitis or what. Both my wrists are
fisherman's
killing me. So I'm glad to be getting a little break from that. And anytime I'll be fine. And then I'll have a tournament where I'll do a lot of flipping for a couple of days.
Or a jerk bait or something like that. Yeah, that's the wrist wrecker.
I mean, it takes me a couple of weeks to recover. So I need that time off. I'm happy it's coming.
When is the first event for MLF?
It starts the first
February?
Week of February.
Yeah. Yep.
So yes, I've got, I really need to be ready. I may do a scouting trip or two. So I'd like to have my boat done and ready in December. That way, once the new year flips over, I'm ready to roll.
Yeah.
You don't want to be taking it out on the water the first time,
maiden voyage
in
a tournament.
You need to do some stuff and play with some stuff.
Is there a schedule out yet?
We've got dates and they're finalizing the last two lakes. So we should have, by the time we do the next podcast, we should have it finished up.
Right. I look forward to
it. Give us something to look forward to. Yeah.
It's always fun because, it's basically what your life's going to be like for the following year. Right. So like, if you're going to a bunch of cool fisheries, it's like, man, I got a lot to look forward to this year. I'm going to be spending a lot of time in cool places. And in the past, sometimes you get schedules. It's like, hey, man, it's not going to be that much fun this year.
They're going to kill it. They're going to kill it this year.
It's going to be a good schedule.
Yeah.
Yep. It will. They've talked about, just going to good places. So
cool.
Thanks for listening to the podcast, guys. This one took a copious amount of editing. Nick said a few things that he probably shouldn't have said, but we've got it cleaned up now and it's ready to go. If you get a chance, give us a 5-star review and we'll talk to you next time.